Okay, this is Dave Banner again, author of Loving It All, Living with a Awakening Heart. Yet another podcast episode. This one's called The Role of Service. I have a really good friend who many years ago gave me a little acronym which I found to be really helpful. It's called DSFSQ. And what it stands for is when you're feeling depressed or egoically trapped, in other words, your life is not working, use this acronym, do something for someone quick. In other words, if you get out of your own self-centeredness, you suddenly feel much better. And try this, you will notice it's actually true. Got a couple of quotes for you here from Marianne Williamson. These are really good quotes about service. The key to abundance in every area of life is this. We experience God's peace and harmony to the extent to which we love, forgive, and focus on the good in others and ourselves. In time, we give in devotion, we show. In efforts to love and serve and forgive each other, we partake of the spiritual connection that restores the link between the Father and His separated children. Excellent quote. Here's another one. Marianne says, there's only one of us here. When we give to others, we give to ourselves. What we withhold from others, we withhold from ourselves. In any moment when we choose fear over love, we does not deny ourselves the experience of paradise. Okay. If you help others and serve others and come from the attitude, I feel sorry for you and I want to help you, this is not genuine service. If helping comes from this attitude, it's hierarchical in nature, which means saying, I have more than you, and I will stoop down to help you. This is not genuine helping. Genuine helping is sharing. In other words, I share what I have with you without any taint of demeaning you or looking down upon you. I just enrolled in a course with Charles Eisenstein. It's called Living in the Gift. And his point is, the world the way it is right now, especially in capitalistic society, is not working because everybody's out for themselves. And so what he argues is the way out of this morass is looking for people that actually could use your help. It could be money, it could be something else. But alert yourself to what seems to be a need out there and provide a solution if you have the resources to do that. Eisenstein argues if we all behave in this way, we will begin to create a world of abundance and peace. But continuing on the way we are with, I don't give you anything, I'm trying to get everything I can for myself, that's the separated self, and that's the key to hell on earth. Here's what the Dalai Lama said. A proper appreciation of the workings of cause and effect suggests that far from being powerless, there's much we can do to influence our experience of suffering. But, as with torrents of negative thoughts and emotions, we certainly have a choice in how we respond to our experience of suffering. If we wish, we can adopt a more dispassionate and rational approach, and on that basis, we can discipline our response to it. In other words, we can simply fret about our misfortunes, and when we do, we become frustrated. As a result, the Dalai Lama says, afflictive emotions arise and our peace of mind is destroyed. When we do not restrain our tendency to react negatively to suffering, it becomes a source of negative thoughts and emotions. So, this is a clear relationship between the impact suffering has on our heart and mind and our practice of inner discipline. If we truly are all one being, who are you helping anyway? In the separated state of consciousness, the egoic consciousness, it looks like you're helping somebody else. But if everything is one, if everything is interconnected in this web of being, as we've argued in this book, then when you're helping another person, you're really just helping yourself. The truth is, we are all one being, even if it doesn't look that way. In our current state of amnesia, the collective dream of separation, it appears that helping another takes something from us. But anyone who has really given selflessly knows that the psychic rewards for doing so are great. You always feel better when you help somebody else. Because at some level, we know that helping others is really helping ourselves. Okay, this is a very, very pregnant area of what I could say exploration. The term of self also overcomes the dualistic notion that one is separated from God. Historically, the picture is that there's a sinner down here on earth and there's a God up there somewhere in heaven. Well, that's an egoic viewpoint. To most people, God implies otherness. However, there is no separation in the allness of creation, so it's impossible for the created to be separate from the creator. Think about it. Enlightenment, therefore, is a revelation of the self, and the illusion of the reality of a separate self is dissolved. David Hawkins, the author of Power versus Force, has another book called I, Reality and Subjectivity. Here's what he says. The constant awareness of one's existence as I can be the ever-present expression of the innate divinity of the self. That is, unless, of course, we're referring to the egoic I, there is a universal constant experience that is purely subjective and of which no proof is possible or necessary. The I of the self is an expression of divinity as awareness, which is therefore beyond time and form. This appears to be a paradox. The I that is the separated self is the ego. However, you can use the term to indicate the transcendent or divine I. Hawking continues, the truth of this identity is obscured by the duality created by the perception and disappears when all points of view are relinquished. Okay, we need to also talk about the difference between service and enabling. Those of you that are familiar with Alcoholics Anonymous and other forms like that know that if you try to help an addictive person by rescuing them, you are enabling them. In other words, you're just helping them continue the addictive process and the downward spiral of these people. You might feel sorry for somebody that's having an unconscious urge to hinder their progress, but AA uses this term a lot. It's if help is not actually helping a person to a higher level of function, is it really help? I would argue that it's not. If our service is really a sacred act of service to life itself, then there's no hesitation. One is compelled to help by a spiritual impulse. This is because we sense our connectedness to everything else. Therefore, there's no separation between helping another and helping all of life. But if we stay locked into the view of the separated self, then we're taking care of number one and we're egoic. There's a wonderful expression in Alcoholics Anonymous that I want to use here. It's called fake it until you make it. That means that we can pretend to be part of a unified whole, even if our perceptual apparatus tells us that we're separate from all life. The more we act in this pretend mode, the closer we come to the realization that we are no longer pretending. Try this out. You may find it quite useful. One of the strengths of Alcoholics Anonymous comes from its fellowship, the realization that there is a natural unity and connection among addicts. My cousin Tim, who since deceased, was a very serious alcoholic, and he took me to a number of his meetings, and I just noticed at these meetings this wonderful camaraderie and binding together these groups had. Now, they still had addictive tendencies. They smoked too much and drank too much coffee, but that's another story. The point I'm trying to make here is there was kind of a unity that developed among these people, which was actually very appealing. So humans see themselves as a part of a larger family of people. They can see the oneness of that group. The problem is when it's ethnocentric. In other words, my people are the only people. World-centric, which is what Ken Wilber calls it, is where we're headed towards, and that's what we need to look at. Actually, cosmic-centered, if you want to get really technical about it, because we're part of all life. In the egoic world, which I've already said is illusory, who are we helping when we help somebody? If our exclusive focus is outside ourselves in the so-called outer world, no less a philosopher than Plotinus, a Neoplatonist, argues that the singular focus clouds the mirror inward to the soul. If we cannot see into ourselves, then what we see is clouded by the aforementioned shadow elements, which I talked about in an earlier chapter. This is called projection. Another way of putting this is to see that our inner mirror, our consciousness, has become foggy and tarnished with our over-concern with material and worldly things. So, consumerism and materialism obviously have diverted our attention away from the inner worlds. The real power lies, obviously, in the inner worlds. If our service is genuine and selfless, it promotes oneness. If it's done to get something from another or to aggrandize one's ego, it promotes separation. The promise of materialism, I don't know if you've thought of this, but the promise is that by getting this next thing, you're going to feel better about yourself. Of course, the problem is you get the next thing, you get a momentary boost in your happiness, and then you go looking for the next best thing to boost your happiness again. You can't fix yourself from out there. This is where the power of meditation comes in. If we focus our attention inward, we lessen the power of the external world to influence our dualistic tendencies. In deep meditation, we realize that everything's fine. There are no problems. Problems are simply a manifestation of duality in a world where we imagine some things are good and some things are bad. In the present moment, do you see any problems? In the present moment has no problems. In meditation, you come to the still point where problems cannot exist. Problems are time-bound, meaning that the problem can only exist in time. In the present, there is no time. There's no past, there's no future, so therefore there are no problems. If someone seems to need help, we're seeing that part of ourselves that has not been integrated yet into our natural state of wholeness. So who is this person seemingly in need of help? Well, it's a part of us. Service is really a response to divine prompting. That's one way to look at it. As we learn to listen to that still, small voice inside, we begin to align ourselves with our larger divine purpose. In this alignment, we automatically know what to do and how to do it. You do not actually need to plan for the future in reality. If you are awake to each present moment and the opportunities and constraints it offers, you will know the next thing to do. This is a foolproof recipe for peaceful living. Planning is for the fearful ego, which is constantly worried about survival. And worry it should, because the ego has no idea what to do in the present moment, since it lives exclusively in the past or the future. Having said that, there's no danger in planning, as long as it's a flexible plan, subject to change as the spiritual prompting indicates. A really good thing for you to do is when you wake in the morning, and I do this every morning, is say to yourself, I take responsibility for awakening. I take interest in awakening. I rest in wakefulness. I carry with me a continuation of the work that I have done in my dream life. I prepare myself in gratitude for what is next for me. Please guide me. This is a prayer that I use every morning, and it's very, very helpful. Okay, what about the Enneagram perspective on service? Well, there are two Enneagram types that focus on the needs of others, the type 9 and the type 2. I'm going to select type 2 here because it's called the giver or the helper. These are people who ingratiate themselves to others by helping. They learned as small children that to get response, positive response from the caregiver, you had to help other people. So they try to make themselves indispensable, actually. And the problem, of course, that the two needs to overcome spiritually is they'll tell you, I don't need anything. I'm just here to help you. So they basically deny their own needs. Their need for love and approval is extreme. They feel dependent on it. So they try to win love by placing the object of their affection in their lens. So they give freely, pretending they have no needs, and they do it to get love. This is not unconditional love. In fact, it's very conditional. And the two, after giving and giving in service to others, can get to the point of anger if they aren't sufficiently appreciated and recognized. They want to be seen as loving, generous, kind, empathetic, and above all, always there for others. They deny their own needs, and this is not what we mean by service. Okay, service is an antidote to self-centeredness. What I mean by that is, if life is all about me, the imagined self-separated self, then there's no room for service. Furthermore, there's no incentive for service if it's all about me. But by extending myself and serving another, even if it seems like I'm helping another separate person, the effect is one of healing. Do yourself a favor. Give an act of selfless service. It will make you feel better. And it will always allow you to look inward and begin to clear out the shadow elements that are clouding your lens, meaning your soul. What could be better than that? I've started doing this practice of living in the gift, and I've made two large contributions to people that needed help. They needed assistance. And it made me feel so good to help them. And it made them feel good because it enabled them to do what they needed to do on the planet. So it's not an enabling thing, but it's actually a very conscious way to help people. You can be a volunteer and still be self-centered. Some people do this. I feel so good because I'm helping other people. That's egoic. That's not what you want. What you want to do is give without concern for results, without expecting anything back. I know that's kind of hard to understand, but that's what we're looking for in the value of service. If you want to discover identity with the all, our true identity, then our case of mistaken identity with a small, fearful ego must be relinquished. In the so-called fall from grace millennia ago, this can be reversed by realizing that it never really happened. We've been operating in a delusional state, thinking that we're separate from all of life, when in truth, we never separate from God or from each other. We just thought we did. So, for most of us, this fall can be reversed gradually. And step by step, by living a life of service, we can do it. As Swami Ramananda says, there are two ways to liberation. One is to expand your ego to infinity, and the other is to reduce it to nothing. The former by knowledge, the latter by devotion. The knowledge holder says, I am God, the universal truth. The devotee says, I am nothing, O God, you are everything. In both cases, the ego sense disappears. Okay, that's enough for that chapter. Thank you very much. Thank you.